From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, earlier today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell responded to the House Democrats' latest relief bill.
This week, the Speaker published an 1,800-page seasonal catalog of left-wing oddities and called it a coronavirus relief bill.
What are some of those left-wing oddities? Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania is here with an analysis of this $3 trillion proposed bill. And a major political upset in California. For the first time in 22 years, the Republicans have taken a seat held by Democrats. How did it happen? Sean Steele, former chairman of the California Republican Party, is here to tell us. And Lila Gilbert, senior fellow for International Religious Freedom at FRC, is here with news on Nigeria. Also, would you like some good news? All right, I'll give you some. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals issued a favorable decision for churches in California. Travis Weber will be here with the details on that case, as well as an update on the number of churches exercising their constitutional rights that are now reopening. That and more on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter and you want to keep up with me, it's at T Perkins. Hey, some of you have probably already downloaded the Stand Firm app, but if you've not gotten the new improved app, well, go to the App Store and get the latest update. The app has been rebuilt from the ground up. If you don't already have it, go to Google or Apple App Store and search Stand Firm. Or you can simply follow the links to TonyPerkins.com. The all-new Stand Firm app allows you to listen to Washington Watch when it airs on at any time, any place. That's good for you. Also, everything's archived right there. Plus, it helps you in being a participant in this republic of ours. Gives you the action items, people to contact, all that you need to be an informed, engaged, responsible citizen. Get the Stand Firm app at the App Store. Okay, yesterday we mentioned the Democrats' latest coronavirus relief bill. We've now had about 24 hours to look at it, and it is safe to say it is less about funding coronavirus relief and more about funding their political agenda. Here again is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell earlier today.
The bold new policy from Washington Democrats that will kick the coronavirus to the curb and save American families from this crisis. Here it is. New annual studies on diversity and inclusion within the cannabis industry. Let me say that again. The Democrats' proposed coronavirus bill includes taxpayer-funded studies to measure diversity and inclusion among the people who profit off of marijuana. The word cannabis appears in the bill 68 times, more times than the word job, and four times as many as the word hire. So maybe it's best if House Democrats focus on cannabis studies and leave economics to the rest of us.
Now, here to tell us about what that smoke is coming from the House side of the Capitol is Congressman Scott Perry, who represents Pennsylvania's 10th Congressional District. He serves on the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, as well as the Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks so much for the opportunity, and I think you've got it pretty much right. We can just characterize this as the same thing that unfortunately the left always does. It's in this case, it's a run on the bank, $3 trillion more in one bill than we spent in all the other packages combined. And as you already pointed out, I mean, 68 times it mentions cannabis. I think it mentions China once. But it does make sure that people that are here illegal foreign nationals, they will get stimulus checks and there'll be no more deportations. We will bail out the multi-union pensions that have been mismanaged and are going bankrupt. And we will also start bailing out all the states that have mismanaged their money. And especially if you live in a state that's got a rainy day fund or you know, some proof that there's been strong and appropriate fiscal management, you will be on the hook to take care of all the states that have not done that. So it's completely unfair. It's completely unnecessary. It doesn't fix anything for really anybody. And it's essentially a leftist wish list. And, meanwhile, while our country is struggling with the circumstances like we have in Pennsylvania, where we're economically locked down and we have our seniors dying in elder care facilities. This does nothing to fix those items. And I think those are the items that the American people would really like to focus on and see us focused on.
And let me just point out, although it's probably abundantly clear to our listeners, that all of those items you mentioned are unrelated to the coronavirus. So it has nothing to do that those things happened because of the coronavirus. These things were existing before the coronavirus. As you said, they see this as an opportunity to bail out the states and the local governments that have not been operating with financial integrity and make the states that have been operating the right way pay for the others.
That's exactly what it is. This is a leftist wish list that they can never enact on its own, either at the ballot box or legislatively. So they're taking this opportunity when the country is in crisis to move their policy goals. Now, I will tell you, even though this will likely pass the House tomorrow, because obviously the Democrats outnumber the Republicans, we simply can't stop it. This along, by the way, with proxy voting, so they're going to change a couple hundred years of history in our country, where we are accounted for when we show up and vote, and everybody knows how we vote. They're going to change the rules so we can vote by proxy. We will oppose that as well, but it will pass, and it won't pass the Senate. It won't even be brought up, and of course the president won't sign it. But what they will do is they will pass this bill, and then when they go into negotiation for anything else, they will say, "Now see here, we've already passed this stuff. So that is reason that we should include this in whatever other bill that we're working on at the time." And that's how these things end up becoming mainstream talking points and policy provisions.
A very important point for our listeners to hear, that while we know that this is not going to see the light of day, in fact, Mitch McConnell saying that this was going to the legislative graveyard. The reality is that is exactly what they do with this when they pass it overwhelmingly, or at least with the majority they have in the House. They'll be able to use this as a gambit in their negotiations. But I want to go back, Congressman Scott Perry, to something you said a moment ago about, you know, the elections. That's actually covered in this bill.
Yes.
Believe it or not.
Yes.
What this does in changes elections, not just giving money to the states to have elections. It requires 15 days of early voting for federal elections and no excuse absentee vote by mail for all voters. During pandemic, states must automatically mail absentee ballots. It creates an end around to states that have voter ID laws, and it mandates all voters can register the same day and online. Tell me this is about the coronavirus.
No, this is not about the coronavirus. This is about stealing elections. I know you're going to talk a little later about the upset victory in California. And look, they tried it there. They have stolen elections in the past. Unfortunately, Pennsylvania has taken on all this mail-in balloting and other things. You know, I've lived here for a very long time, and we always – one of the things about Pennsylvania on election night is you got to know at the end of the evening who won the election. Now we're probably going to be like these other states – that we have to wait a week or two until the liberals get enough votes. You know, they find them in a car trunk somewhere. And you ever notice that the counting never ends until they win? But as soon as they win, then the counting ends. That's what this is all about, federalizing the elections, taking them over, and then making sure they have the options and the abilities to steer the election so that they get the results that they want. Again, has nothing to do with the pandemic, but using the bad situation to further their goals.
I want to play another short clip, this one of Nancy Pelosi yesterday when she was announcing this bill. I can only describe it as bizarre, but I want to play the clip of Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker.
This is an historic challenge and therefore momentous opportunity for us to meet the needs of the American people to save their lives, their livelihoods, and our democracy. 400 years ago, the great poet John Donne wrote, "No man is an island entire of itself. Each is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Each man's death diminishes me, for I'm involved in mankind. Therefore, send now to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.
I'm not even going to go into that last part, but save the democracy. First off, we have a republic.
Yes.
But how in the world is this going to save the democracy? It might save the Democratic Party, but not the democracy.
No, the democracy is under assault right now, and I get so frustrated with my counterparts on the other side of the aisle, especially when they talk about saving the democracy, not understanding as elected officials in the highest office of the land that we live in a republic. But then also when they throw in there that we're saving lives. I live under the rule of Governor Tom Wolf here, who requires that nursing homes and assisted living facilities take COVID-19 patients into their facilities when we know that the most vulnerable in our population are the ones that succumb to it. We've got in some of my counties over a 90% death rate because of that, and they talk about saving lives, and then the next day they'll come out and say that we have to support financially Planned Parenthood. I'm sorry, it just doesn't wash with me, and it's just the same old two-faced rhetoric from the left, and we just really obviously have to be suspect of it.
Congressman Perry, you ticked off another item on their list, and that is this funding could go to Planned Parenthood. All that has been done, in fact, in the Paycheck Protection Program that Congress passed in the CARES Act, that would be extended through December 31st, 2021. But all of the language that excluded Planned Parenthood in the abortion industry would be stricken from this provision. So it would allow the funding to go to Planned Parenthood. And of course, those states that have been operating financially inefficiently, many of them fund Planned Parenthood. They would be able to use this money to cover the holes left by the money they gave to Planned Parenthood and other abortion operations.
That's exactly right. And like I said, just to add insult to injury, not only must we pay, be forced to pay in our taxes for things we find morally and just completely objectionable, then they also have to taunt us by saying that if we don't agree with this, if we don't support the HEROES Act,
right,
that we're not for preserving life. Meanwhile, our tax dollars are going exactly to take the most innocent lives of all. And just to remind you and your audience, all of these things in this bill, the HEROES Act, where first responders are paid and so on and so forth, all this stuff is meant for messaging in the fall election. So you're going to see a bunch of advertisements say Representative so-and-so voted against police and voted against nurses that were on the front lines. That's the other side of the unfortunate side of this thing.
Very, very important you point that out, because what is offensive to me about this is that they're passing this on the back of heroes, those who have been out there on the front lines, and they're the recipients of a fraction of this bill. But yet you're absolutely right. This is what will be said in the fall, that those who stood against financial craziness were against the heroes on the front line. Congressman, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your insights and appreciate your stand for freedom.
Well, thank you so much, and God bless you and your audience. Keep fighting.
All right, Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, retired general, brigadier general with the National Guard there in Pennsylvania. All right, coming up next, a major, major, major upset in California. We'll talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, Republicans have won a special election for a congressional seat in Southern California, reclaiming a suburban House seat that was captured by the Democrats back in 2018, the midterms. Now, Republican Mike Garcia came out on top with 56% of the vote. And, of course, they're still counting because they've got the mail-in ballots out there. But defeated Christy Smith, a Democrat who was a state assemblywoman. Now, what is significant about this is that this is the first time in 22 years, count them, 22 years that California Republicans have captured a congressional seat that had gone to the Democrats. Could this be a trend? And what's behind it? Joining me now to talk more about this is Sean Steele, former chairman of the Republican Study Committee and now, I'm sorry, former chairman of the Republican Party in California and now a RNC National Committee man. Sean, welcome back to Washington Watch.
I am so excited to talk with you. You have made my day. So this and plus we're still celebrating. We got a Mexican-American jet pilot that just buried this, the Democrat Nancy Pelosi lookalike. In a district that actually has been represented by a jet pilot for years, the Knight family, and good folks. Then the Democrats did something in 2018, like the which we've never seen. They invented ballot harvesting, big deal, and where they go door-to-door to Democrat low-pro propensity voters, say, I'm from the Democrat Party. I'm here to pick up your ballot. That's illegal in 49 other states. Yeah. And not only that, you don't even have to identify yourself. It could literally be a Martian. It could be a goat. Anything, any person, any robot could pick up the ballot. You never know. And we've seen them. We've seen them come in with 200, 300 ballots at a time and dump them at the voting recorder's office.
So and that's what led to the loss of about 9 or 10 seats in California in the 2018 election.
Well, we had 14 congressmen, and we went down to 7.
Yeah.
They wiped out half the delegation. It was breathtaking what Nancy Pelosi did right in front of us to districts that have been solidly Republican, in some cases for 100 years. And so but most of them were captured with 3% or less. It wasn't like landslides. And most of them, we won most of them on Election Day. But 2 weeks later, when the late provisional vote came in, then we started losing them one after another. So, but
one point to add to that, though, that is also what tilted the control of the House of Representatives. Had California stayed as projected, it was going to be much closer, and most likely the Republicans would have held the House.
Well, here's the biggest reason of all. Why did we lose 2008? Not because of Trump, not because of Pelosi, not because of, social issues. It was not a blue wave. It was a green wave. You put Bloomberg's money together. You put the other billionaires' money together, the outside influences, Act Blue, and the money that Nancy Pelosi raised through the Democrat Party. How about $200 million to flip seven seats?
Yeah.
$200 million, you could control the politics of England and Germany for 100 years. I mean, it's incredible money, the likes of which, when you turn on any TV set, you're seeing Dana Rohrabacher beat up for 10 days in a row. This was extremely expensive TV that the left had cajoled. They won't have that this year.
Well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about what's transpired, because you said they weren't landslides in 18. This is close to a landslide, 56% to 44%.
Yeah, landslides are 10 points or higher. We think we're going to win by 12 points. It's a landslide.
So this is
rejection of the Democrats in the suburb.
And the Democrats are complaining that the Republicans use their tactics to win this election.
Well, we've learned that churches can collect ballots. That is a huge message. We have great Christians all over America, but a significant number of evangelical Christians love America. They don't vote. They just have to be cajoled and pushed and prodded and reminded, because that's not their number. They're not political animals. And I respect that.
Well, Sean, you would be encouraged to know that that it was about 2 o'clock this morning. I got a text from a California pastor who was involved in this race, who was one of those pastors of a mega church, about 10,000 members, who did the ballot harvesting, if you will. He had everyone bring their ballots to the church, and they collected them at the church.
And that's the wave of the future. Also, retirement communities. That works. We have some retirement communities. We did real well in that in the primary in March, and that's a new thing. And so there, those are very active. And other areas that we're encouraging that. So if the Democrats are going to change the rules and you want to win, you better adapt or die. That's what human beings do. We adapt and survive. And so Democrats are very unhappy about that, and we're doing it legally.
I kind of look at this as a political jujitsu move, because you've taken what they've thrown at you and turned around and used it on them. In fact, we've been encouraging churches to do that. If they are going to change the rules, then we need to operate by the rules they create, so it's at least a fair playing field.
Well, we're seeing a much different change of attitude and concern in the evangelical movement in California. No matter what the Democrats say, no matter how many Californians, millions have left. Good, hardcore, God-fearing conservatives have left California, moved to Texas and other states to make them more red. So I'm losing my base. Every weekend we lose 3,000 Californians. Two-thirds of them were Republicans. So, after a few years, you lost a lot. But these communities are still strongly minded Republican and conservative. You still have strong churches. You still have strong families. You have young children. We don't do well in San Francisco, but we do well in the suburbs.
Well, Sean Steele, keep fighting. Encouraging news out of California gives all of us hope. If California can turn around, the rest of the nation will make it too. Sean, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Lots of fun.
All right. Sean Steele, national committee man with the Republican Party there in California. Got to give credit to those guys that stay in the ring and keep fighting despite what they're up against. All right. Coming up next, we'll talk about Nigeria. Today is the 17th birthday of Leah Sheribu, being held captive by Boko Haram. Leila Gilbert is here next as we talk about what's happening to Christians in Nigeria. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. A few weeks ago, we talked about the persecution of Christians in Nigeria. Well, I want to give you an update and show the urgency of religious freedom around the world and the persecution that's taking place. Nigeria has a lot of problems. One is the Islamist group Boko Haram. And Boko Haram is just, and they're well-equipped, well-trained, and they're terrorizing the Christians in Nigeria. And probably one of their best-known victims is Leah Sheribu. She was one of 110 young schoolgirls kidnapped in 2018. Today is her 17th birthday. She remains in captivity, the only one of the 110 girls. And the reason is because she has refused to renounce her faith in Jesus Christ. In my role as chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, she is actually my prisoner of conscience that I have adopted to bring awareness to her case. And I would encourage you to pray for Leah and her family. I've met with her mother on multiple occasions, and we have been working to secure her release. And I would encourage you and ask you to join me in praying for her and advocating as you have the opportunity to press this issue with your elected officials. Well, joining me now to talk more about not just Leah's case, but what is happening in Nigeria and why is Senior Fellow for International Religious Freedom here at the Family Research Council, Leah Gilbert. Leah, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much.
Give our listeners an update on Leah's status, what we know about her, and efforts to secure her release.
Well, we don't know a lot, and the reports that we've received most recently, which has been several months ago, are kind of hard to be sure they're even true. That there was someone that was kidnapped and then released that said that she had been made pregnant by one of her captors, that there were other reports that she was married to this person, and that she has a baby. And, of course, we can't be sure of any of this. What we are sure of is that she's now been there. She was 14 when she was picked up in February of 2018, and her life's going by And it's so hard to imagine what her life is like. But, you know, she's the one we can see because we have pictures of her. And there's so many others in Nigeria that are in dire straits, some kidnapped, some are wounded badly. We've just heard today that 30 more are dead in Nigeria thanks to the Fulani tribesmen. I put that in quotes. They're jihadis. And once again, they've swept through an area and just slaughtered household after household. So the whole situation in Nigeria is a bloodbath. And Leah, I'm thankful for her because she has such a pretty, sweet face. And it makes me think to pray for all of them. But she's not the only one.
Yeah. And that's the point of our prisoners of conscience, is to put a face to the issue of religious persecution. And not that they are the only ones we focus on, but it's to bring awareness. As you pointed out, she's not the only one. Nigeria, largest country in population-wise in Africa, and it's about 214 million people, almost evenly divided between Christians and Muslims. And there is a fierce attack taking place on Christians, the Fulani herdsmen, and then you add to that Boko Haram. I mean, the Christians are really being targeted there, and this is potentially going to impact the entire African continent and even into Europe as people flee the violence that's taking place there. What is being done to address the situation in Nigeria?
Well, not nearly enough, but we have to give some credit to our President Trump, because he did speak directly to the President Muhammadu Buhari of Nigeria, and told him point blank that there were too many Christians being killed. And Buhari kind of nodded, and nothing was changed. And he is a Fulani himself, which is a very large tribe. So that doesn't necessarily mean every Fulani is responsible for what's going on there, because these are radicalized Muslims that are doing this. But there's not much being done. There are efforts being made by activists now to try to get more information, get it better documented, get it in front of the State Department, so that we can perhaps sanction some of the people that aren't doing anything.
Yeah, this is a very troubling situation, not just from a personal standpoint with Leah and the other victims of this violence, but this has the potential to be a major geopolitical issue if it is not resolved in some form or fashion. Leela, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for the update.
Thank you.
Leela Gilbert, Senior Fellow here at the Family Research Council for International Religious Freedom. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. The administration has brought this up. In fact, has made reference to Leah's case. And we can't solve all of the world's problems. We can't do that. But this is a big one, because what happens in Nigeria, if this turns into genocide, could, as I said, affect the entire African continent and even into Europe. But most importantly for you, listeners of Washington Watch, to know that there are brothers and sisters in Christ that are literally laying down their lives for the faith. Pray for them. All right, coming up next, victory in the Ninth Circuit for churches. Travis Weber is here to tell us about it.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community. And keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. And let me remind you again, if you do not have the Stand Firm app, you need to get it. You need to get it. Go to the App Store, download the Stand Firm app. Not only will it enable you to listen to Washington Watch wherever you are in the world, live or later through the archives, but it will also alert you to things such as H.R. 6800. Which is the bill we were talking about earlier, the Misnamed Heroes Act, the AKA the Pelosi Partisan Relief Bill that will be voted on tomorrow morning. And that would be very timely for you to have that information in your pocket. And on top of that, we will connect you with your congressman. We will connect you based on your zip code with your congressman so that you can call them and give them your opinion on legislation that they'll be voting on. That's what a republic is. They represent you, so you have the right to communicate with them. Joining me now to, before we go into the victory that I mentioned in California, or at least good news for churches, I want to bring in Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council, because Travis, this bill, H.R. 6800, will be voted on tomorrow morning in the House. And you were just telling me it's been made even worse to try to get more liberal votes for the bill.
Yeah, Tony, this really is a Democrat wish list of all their pet projects and pet ideologies that they want to use the coronavirus to push on America. It's just a massive, massive overreach. And the reason we're concerned and we're opposing this is this is bad for human dignity and human life. It's bad for the American family, and it's harmful to our country. And we have numerous pro-life concerns already in the original bill, a number of family concerns, pro-family concerns about the negative impacts there. And as you mentioned, you know, this the original bill was not radical enough, apparently, for some Democrats. So there's going to be a manager's amendment introduced and it voted on, which is even more radical, imposes more restrictions on American businesses and entities by forcing them to comply with heavy-handed government mandates on non-discrimination law. So you know, I mean, this thing's gone from bad to worse. There's a number of problematic provisions with it. From, I already mentioned the life issue, refusal to include the Hyde Amendment type protection for funding for abortion through this bill, which 60% of Americans don't want their tax dollars going to abortion. Yet House Democrats insist on pushing this without Hyde, and pushing a number of harmful economic policies, $600 per week unemployment increase that is going to incentivize a lack of work, and a safe banking pro-marijuana type provision that's going to expand access there, and other provisions in this. So, yeah, this is very problematic, and we need to make sure that this type of bill is opposed by all Americans.
So, folks, here's where your participation comes in. I've said many times that maintaining a republic is not a spectator activity. It is a participatory activity, meaning that you need to weigh in. So you can call your member of Congress. You can call the Capitol switchboard. Now you may say, well, I'm not sure who it is. Well, that's another reason to download the Stand Firm app, because we'll help you figure that out. But all you have to do is call the switchboard, 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. Just give them your zip code if you don't know who your member of Congress is. They'll connect you with their office. And just tell them that I have real concerns over H.R. 6800 and all of the left-wing ideas that this would fund. And I want to go back for just a moment, Travis, before we move on to our other topic. I just want to remind folks of, there's a lot of egregious stuff in this bill. I mean, you talked about the marijuana. I played a clip from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who pointed out that 68 times cannabis is mentioned in this bill. But the elections, this doesn't just, it says it provides funding for the states to hold elections. It mandates that 15 days of early voting for federal elections and no excuse absentee vote by mail for all voters. It mandates during pandemics, states must automatically mail absentee ballots. Creates end around to state voter ID laws. You got to have an ID to cash a check. You have to have an ID to get on a plane, but not to vote. Mandates that all voters can register the same day and online. How do you verify that? You can't. That's the point. So call your member of Congress, 202-224-3121, and give them your thoughts on H.R. 6800. Okay, Travis, I want to move on to some good news out of the Ninth Circuit. We used to call it the Ninth Circus, but because of appointments by Donald Trump, that court is actually becoming somewhat evenly divided between liberal, crazy liberal, and conservative. And so a decision out of there that's a technical decision, but nonetheless, good news for churches in California. Tell us about it.
Tony, it is a good decision to see out of the Ninth Circuit. And, you know, this concerns a long-running issue that Family Research Council and others have been involved in, that is protecting religious entities and churches in California against that state government's oppressive attempt to force them to violate their conscience by funding abortion and their health care plans. Going back to the Obama administration, that state refused to enforce the Weldon Amendment and tried to force many churches to fund abortion. So this effort started in 2014. The Ninth Circuit ruling is the latest in the federal courts that where the court is saying these churches have a claim here, and this the technical aspect of this ruling, where they're saying these claims are justiciable and the courts must hear them, basically telling the federal district court out there that it needs to consider the claims of these churches against the state of California for an allegation of a violation of conscience. So a good day for churches out there and others who don't want to live under a regime that's forced them to violate their conscience and trying to see California comply with the federal conscience protection known as the Weldon Amendment, something that President Trump's administration through Health and Human Services has enforced against California, taken action on, and holding California and other states' feet to the fire by saying federal funding can't be used to discriminate against healthcare entities who do not want to fund abortion like this and want to follow their conscience. So this is related to the administration's work, and we're glad to see this ruling live and the case live for another day.
By the way, I'll just mention that ruling, the rule by the Trump administration, the enforcement of that rule, announced at the Family Research Council earlier this year at the annual March for Life. Secretary Alex Azar made that announcement there at FRC. Speaking of churches, speaking of California, many, many churches now across the nation, California in particular, because of the indefinite lockdown put in place by Governor Newsom, many states, or many churches rather, are starting to meet. They're saying, we're going to go ahead and meet. But they've got some good wind to their back, if you will, because a number of lawsuits have been filed. And thus far, those that have come down, most have come down, if not all that have been decided thus far, have come down on the side of churches. You've got the Department of Justice weighing in on these cases on the side of churches. The First Amendment, well, quite frankly, is doing pretty well right now when it gets to the courts.
It is, Tony, and especially in those cases where the churches are being reasonable and attempting to navigate this well and are simply saying you can't violate religious freedom as this proceeds, and you can't target and single out and target religious entities for discrimination as we open up as a country. So the churches that are walking in a reasonable manner, proceeding in a reasonable manner, and standing up and defending their rights at the same time are the ones who are winning here. For the most part, we have a few outlier situations, but we've talked about the situation in Kentucky, in Louisville, the On Fire Christian Center case, and other cases there against Governor Beshear, calling out his targeting of religious entities. And we see some wins in the courts there. One case it lost at the district court level, but Sixth Circuit reversed and said that, you know, churches must be treated equally. You can't be discriminated against when you're treating other secular entities in a better manner. And there's no reason for that, really no good reason sufficient to meet the First Amendment standard. And so by and large, we are seeing wins for religious freedom, which makes sense. I mean, the government needs to justify its restriction of constitutional rights. It has not done that by and large. Governments have not done that by and large in many cases in this process, and that includes religious restrictions of religious rights. The government has to justify them. And so I think that's what we're seeing here. Courts saying, look, the government has not set forth a sufficient reason in the applicable standard for the case. May vary, but it has not set forth often a sufficient reason for restricting religious rights. The case in Mississippi, we see the one in Virginia, Lighthouse one, where DOJ intervened also, and on with others. For the most part, we are seeing wins in the courts.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out, you talked about those that are proceeding with reasonable approaches, those that are putting in place best practices. And we're talking about, like, most churches complied with the initial request of the government to, you know, slow the spread, don't meet. And it was like the patriotic duty. Yes, we'll do that. We'll do that for 15 days. And then the president came back and said, we need to extend it for another 15 days. Okay, well, we don't. All right. We'll do that for the sake of our nation, for our community, for our churches. But then, you know, you get some of these governors that just are going overboard. Like, you've got Kentucky, you've got California, that have put these stay-at-home orders in place indefinitely. I mean, they haven't even given an answer as to when we can meet again. But then they're allowing certain activities to go forward, and that's where the real problem begins for them when it comes to the courts and the First Amendment. Because, as you said, first off, it's got to be reasonable. All right, a new virus, it happens. Nobody really knows what's going to take place. It's reasonable for the government to say no meetings, no public meetings. That's reasonable. But then it has to be, as you've pointed out, the least restrictive. And it doesn't restrict message. It was only meeting. But then it has to be applied across the board for everybody. They got to be treated the same. In fact, if anything, churches and those with enumerated constitutional rights should be extra level of protection against discrimination. But now, as they've started to open back up, and you see stores, restaurants, they don't have a leg to stand on when they're telling churches that they can't meet.
Yeah, Tony, the justification given in some of these cases, you know, which we've been talking about, the government's need to justify its position is just not sufficient, not constitutionally sufficient. If we look at the recent opinion out of the Northern District of Illinois, where some churches sued Illinois governor, the court's analysis in that case, it recognizes that the churches claimed that they were treated differently than secular entities, but then the court basically dismisses that and does its own analysis of how churches are somehow different. This is not a proper constitutional analysis and approach. The government has to justify its restrictions and the way in which they do or don't impact churches. And, you know, if a restriction on religious rights in most instances, most analyses does have to meet the compelling strict scrutiny standard, compelling interest, and advance in the narrowest way possible. Even if it's a more lenient review for the standard for the government, though, the government has to show a rational basis for what it's doing. And I don't think in many cases they've even shown that by restricting religious entities when letting secular entities open up in the manner that they have. You know, if there's no danger from letting a certain number of people congregate in a grocery store, then likewise, the same standards should apply to the church, and the church has to take the same precautions that the grocery store has to take. So, yeah, I don't think, you know, some of these courts are out of line, some of the government's approach to this, some of the governments are out of line with what is constitutionally required. The burden is on the government, and they always have to make a standard, even if it's a lesser standard under different constitutional analyses.
Well, I think they're at a point where the government, I mean, they're going to have a really good case, because now I think it's been almost 8 weeks. The churches are ready to meet, and I believe churches should be putting in place their own plans on reopening. In fact, I think they should be reopening, but using best practices. And that's one of the things we've provided. And that resource is available at frc.org/church. And it's basically guidelines for reopening. And I think it's time for churches to take that responsibility and do it responsibly. But nonetheless, we cannot wait on government any longer in many of these cases where we've seen, or in many of these states where we've seen government actually being hostile to religious institutions.
Tony, I agree. And the guidelines that we put out, which you mentioned, are at frc.org/church, go through practices that you see a lot of businesses and entities that are operating right now taking safety practices, practices to remain clean and keep and prevent the spread. These are things that all of us are doing anyway, and churches should be taking the lead in trying to move ahead in the best way possible.
All right, we got to go. Travis, thanks so much for joining us. Make sure you wash your hands on the way out, and stay away.
I'll do that.
6 weeks away, or 6 feet away. All right, folks. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "When you've done everything you can do and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, just keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.